We're glad that there are people here who are not in the active role of parenting right now, whether they intend to parent at some later time, whether they are really having that responsibility with other people's children. They may be deciding whether they even want to go into that role of parenting, and that's an important thing to think about beforehand, too, because we really want to expand that role of parenting of who's responsible, and that includes more than those who biologically reproduce. But we'll get into that in a little bit.
How many of you are teachers? A lot of professional teachers. Do you feel that you are in a parenting role as a teacher? If you do, put your hand up again. Okay, what about if you're teaching Sunday school? Do you feel like you're in a parenting role when you teach Sunday school or confirmation class or lead a youth group or something? Does that strike you as being an aspect of parenting too? Okay, what about if you're just thinking about children in general in your city, your state, the United States? Do you feel any need to feel responsible for what's happening to children in general in this country? How many of you feel that way sometimes? Okay. Yeah, I mean, not 24 hours a day like you do with your own kids. Well, I'm glad you do too, because you've got a long time ahead of you to deal with that. Well, we thought the first thing we'd do would be ask you to think a little bit, and we'll brainstorm a little bit about what your hopes and dreams are for children, for your children personally, for children that you work with, or for children in general for the 1990s. What do you hope will happen to children in the next decade or so? What are your dreams for children? What sort of a world do you envision? What kind of adults do you want them to become? What are some of the things that would be goals? If you could be the person who's structuring life for children in the United States in the next decade. Okay.
I guess one area that I feel is really strong is that for my own children specifically, but also for others, is to have a good solid foundation coming out of their years of being in a home and in a school environment where they have a good foundation for a good feeling about themselves and therefore being good decision makers.
Okay. Good decision makers is a real crucial issue if we're going to raise children in a democracy, isn't it? And, you know, what are we doing about raising children so that the form of government that we know and love will continue the way it is? And being decision makers is really crucial, isn't it? You know, currently, I think in our country, just a few of us are really taking that responsibility seriously. A lot of people don't bother voting. More people vote in a presidential election, and yet that's the person we probably know the least about or have the opportunity to know least about, isn't it? No, I mean, you might know more about somebody that's running for the school board in your town or have access to information about that person as you ask around. Okay, what's another hope or dream that you would wish for children? Anything, yeah.
They could have hopes and dreams if they could
That's pretty scary nowadays, isn't it? When children are interviewed, there are a lot of children who really aren't sure they're going to ever grow up. They think it's not much of a chance. And I think that's a very hopeless way for children to grow up. And it certainly must have a bearing on how they attack their schoolwork and how they look at drugs and things like that, to feel so hopeless that they will not grow up and that their hopes and dreams won't be fulfilled, so why bother having them? Okay, what's another one?
They would come out of childhood with a healthy set of values.
Okay. Whatever healthy set of values means. And you know, obviously we all know what we mean by that. At least that's something that probably we should be thinking of as parents. Yes?
I would like to see a real change come about in the next few years concerning non-violent type ways that children play and deal with situations in life. And a less of an emphasis, I guess, on all of the violent type toys.
Okay, that can cover a whole range of things, can it, beside toys? How about television programs? Would you toss that in?
The whole focus towards children that has to do with violence, video games, all of that.
homes where violence is being foisted on children in an attempt to parents relieving their own feelings or parents attempting to discipline using forms of violence that Kathy spoke so eloquently against yesterday. Violence in the streets. Some children live in areas where it isn't, they feel that impact of violence. But there are ways that we could probably make a bigger impact if we get together and fuss about it. Yes?
I'd like to see more children come from two-parent families.
Okay. That's been a real toughie in recent years. There is some evidence that it is beginning to turn, that the divorce rate is beginning to go down. So maybe the pendulum is swinging back again. But it's still true that, I'm not good at remembering statistics, Kathy. Do you know, is it over half the kids? Well, you don't even live in this country. How would you know? But it's a staggering statistic, the number of children. It's like one in every three children. Do you know, Ricky, have you read that?
I think it's even higher than that.
It changes so often that I keep hearing different statistics, but it's a staggering number of children that are going to live in single-parent homes and then in blended homes.
It's something actually between 60 and 70% who will have the experience sometime before they're age 18 and living in a single-parent family.
That sounds about
through
right.
Through death, through, you know, whatever.
It's almost certain that the kids that are in the classrooms that are from two-parent families are in a court.
They certainly are.
We have one school in our district that has 12% of the kids who come from two-parent families. 88% of them come from single-parent families.
Sorry, I'd like to see our children get an education that would be sufficient to allow us
That's an interesting thing because, you know, I hear so much in our country about how superior the Japanese educational program is to ours. Yet my son teaches in a Japanese university and he doesn't feel their education is good at all. It's very, very pressured. Very pressured.
We're a function of our social values where we are far more relaxed in our society than Japanese.
Well, and it seems like their education is sort of a shallow thing where it's a lot of memory work. And once you get accepted into a university, you don't have to learn a thing anymore. It's just getting accepted.
In our educational scheme, we try to educate everyone where they do some weeding out along the way and just
No, they educate everybody. Yeah, and they have like a 93% reading rate. They don't have all these non-readers that we have. I don't know whether it's because they're more homogeneous or something genetic about
them. I thought they just took the, as far as college, they just picked the...
Oh, college. Oh, yeah. You're talking about college. Yeah. I'm talking about the total system. Well, let's not get off on the Japanese because we could spend the rest of the evening debating this. Another goal for children?
Independent thinking skills. That Japanese idea brought it out. Able to carry out the test.
On your own. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I teach in the inner city of Minneapolis, and I would really like to see the kids that I teach be able to at least finish high school and acquire enough skills to not have to be on welfare, because most of my kids are, their families are on welfare, and they see that as perfectly acceptable, and they have so few options. So I really would like to see them have a chance, you know, at a different life, mm-hmm. but I don't know, like,
you're so saying not only a chance, but maybe even be motivated right. some way or other yeah. so that they have, take, yeah. make that opportunity.
Yeah. Okay.
Something somewhat connected with the independent thinking, but well-read in the sense that they've got depth to their education.
So that they're not just run through the system, but they come out being, quote, educated people.
Something that I've kind of noticed with the new computer usage.
Yeah, and you know that's probably one of these things. I mean, I would hope that children would come out of school computer literate, but I think there's a real place for computers in learning. But they are probably good in helping children to learn what's called social knowledge, but that's only 1/4. Of the knowledge that's available to children, and the rest of it probably can't be learned from computers. Computers are great for things that have a right answer.
Maybe okay. Be able to process the experiences yeah. that we have and the education that they are being exposed to. That whole word of processing to internalize it, to evaluate it.
I'd like to see the TV turned off in some families, at least for some of the hours between about 4 and 11 or whenever the kids decide to. I mean, some of the kids that I have watch television from the moment they go home until real late at night, and they watch some real bad things. And then some of them go to fall asleep, you know.
On front of the TV. And to me, one of the scary things is that I've heard debates by the TV industry assuming that that's what should happen and that they are not responsible for what the children watch, it's the parents. And the fact that, yes, but the fact that the parents don't makes me feel like if I were a person writing TV shows or producing them, I would want to feel some sense of responsibility too.
A lot of times there's no parent in the home with the children.
Yeah,
I mean,
the parent is at work.
Mm-hmm. So as part of that, maybe for the children to have discipline to be able to turn it off themselves.
Yeah, that would be great.
They have options for things
so
to do.
It's easy to do that and so hard, like to read. That, you know, it's just something, it's like their friend. I mean, they go home, it's there, nobody else is there.
It takes away the loneliness. Yeah. Somebody talking to you. Mm-hmm.
I guess some of those special, but I like to. Different programs work differently, but they have a better ability to work with others. I mean, you can learn mm-hmm. to math, and you're reading, but you can't relate to the person next to you. We're not going anywhere.
Exactly. So social development is as important as intellectual development.
Mm-hmm. This is a result of what I have as a hope and dream for the whole country, the whole world, really, is the golden 90s. It is a new birth of holism coming out of the counterculture of the 60s, the drug culture of the 70s, the me generation of the 80s, and the hope is that the 90s will be the birth of a new wholeness, putting all this together.
Well, if you came to the Jamf Guard session this morning, you might see some evidence of us moving that direction. I'm currently working on an activities resource for preschool teachers with Augsburg Publishing House, which will be for Christian education. And that's one of the things we certainly want that packet of materials to represent, is a well-rounded intermeshing of the whole child, that every section of the child's development will be considered in this thing, and it won't be, well, now we'll have math time, and now we're going to have religion time. But
I think we're just ready for it now.
Mm-hmm. We begin to see the need for it. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would hope that there's more of a sense of parents spending quantity time as well as quality time together so that kids have this sense of what it means to be a family, what it means to live in intimacy with each other and not be programmed and splintered off into soccer, football, little league, ballet, I mean, 50,000 things.
And expecting to be programmed instead of putting in some effort themselves.
Right, and I think that this involves sacrifice on the part of parents. Be willing to spend time while their children are growing up.
And doesn't that become increasingly difficult as more and more women are in the workplace and not, and having less hours to devote to parenting? Ricky?
You touched on it a little bit, but I guess one of my dreams or hopes for this 90s will begin to take a community responsibility for raising children in the sense that we, you know, the future of our country depends upon how we all help to provide a climate for kids to be raised. And you're talking about the TV industry. I think there are lots of other ways in which the whole community needs to take some responsibility for the help, mental health, and as well as physical health.
Good. That's kind of where we were hoping to lead with all this. So that's probably a good lead-in. And even though I'm sure we could keep on adding more hopes and dreams the entire hour. I know some of you will want to get to herb session after this, and we'll have to quit in 40 minutes. So let's move on to, you know, discuss some of these more in depth now. Kathy and I thought we'd talk a little bit about that community responsibility, so you're making a good bridge by bringing that up at this particular point.
We perhaps want to think back, or we may think back to some earlier generations where that community responsibility was, for the parenting role, was really within the community, not the generations that most of us may have known, although growing up in a rural area of Minnesota, this was certainly my experience. You went downtown, and if somebody saw you that you were not you're doing something that you weren't supposed to do, they knew your parents, they were probably a relative or whatever, they took and saying, well, I'm not sure your parents would like this or whatever. That there was a broader connection with families and with children, and the quote parenting role taken by the community at that time than there is now when we live in a kind of anonymous world. You don't know your neighbors, or you move so frequently, and your relatives are spread all over the country. There's no grandparents, aunt or uncles nearby, so that you're on your own raising your children. We probably don't want to make too much of the good old days. If we really think back to them, they are probably just plain old and not necessarily that good, but there may be some things that we can gather and give us some ideas from the past that we might bring back into the present. And how do we look at, particularly within the family of faith, within the family of our the churches with where we hold memberships, where we are active, to bring that family into the responsibility of the community, sharing the concerns for the developing children. We were really quite fortunate in raising our children for the first 14 years, 16, 17 years of their life in one area of Syracuse, New York, and did not leave until our younger one was really in the middle of her ninth grade and our older one was ready to graduate from high school. But as we talk to them now at age 22 and 25, they think back to their growing years in that community as really being outstanding because there was, even for them in this present generation, a community rearing. We had one Mother Earth neighbor down the street, and if they, you know, if we were not to be around the country for some particular holiday, our kids would go home to that particular home. I mean, that's part of their home. That the neighbors, we went back after being away 8.5 years for a wedding just a month ago and felt we had not really left. There was that community kind of feeling that the parents knew our kids and they had kept up with our kids through the 8.5 years that we've been away. How many of you have some experience such as that in your own community where you say, there is more than just our own family that can give some support to the parent in this gigantic parenting role? I don't think most of us realized what we were getting ourselves into when we took on that responsibility of bringing children in. The whole birthing process is the easiest one of all, really. It's what happens the next 18, 20 years after that that no one is prepared for. What's very common is to have the childbirth education classes the 6 weeks or so before you deliver that can prepare you for that, whatever information the obstetrician gives you along the way, that's a very important, and it is. I don't want to diminish that because it is certainly very beneficial, but it doesn't stop there. And where can we get some of this additional support along the way? Where else in our community can we gain this kind of support to help in this particular role? We may want to look not only at the past in what we can gather of the goodness from the past to carry on, but we can also look at the kind of country we live in. And perhaps that's what makes parenting in the 90s and even in the 80s a very scary situation. I am so glad that our children are at the age that they are, and I look at all of those of you who have these younger ones and say, the Lord be with you. Because there are so many more challenges. There were certainly a lot more challenges to raising our children than I think my parents had raising our family in a rural area where everybody had been around for generations. My father's parents homesteaded the farm in which I grew up. It's been in the family for over a century.
And had the same values.
And had basically the same values. And where our neighborhood gathering place was the church, if it wasn't the school. It was one or the other. And things have changed. We raised our daughters in a near inner city area of Syracuse, New York, with the ghetto on one side, the university, we on the other. And our kids went through from grade kindergarten through grade 12 in schools that were over 50% black and had a very good education, a very good beginning background. But we can look at these changes in the society and look at the world in which we live right now and what are the differences that you see for where you're raising your children from what your own experiences are and realize that we really have to make some changes ourselves in programming our automatic parent push button to change some things because what worked for us may not work for our children any longer. And I think one of the most important things that can give us some of this guidance is to look at what kind of country are we trying to raise our children in. And if we think in terms of democracy, that what percentage of our gross national budget is being spent for defense of our particular political system. I mean, we have these great fears about communism, and so we build up arsenals and arsenals to destroy the world 10 times, and we spend, my friend has a poster in her kitchen that says, if we would have spent $1 million every day since the birth of Christ, we will have spent only half as much as what our country wants to spend on defense in the next 5 years. Now, that's striking. I haven't figured it out. I'm sure someone has. But we evidently think democracy is a very, very important thing to protect. But how are we helping our children learn what democracy is all about? In our family first. And it has to begin at a family level before they can understand it at a national level. And when we look at this marvelous list, I wish we had 3 magic wishes to say, let's put all of this into being for all of the children that are, to feel good about themselves, to have this family time, to be responsible, to be able to use the education that is available to them, and all these other things that we've come up with, which is a marvelous list. How do we help them? How do we help grow these children? Might be the question we want to ask. How do we help grow these characteristics, these hopes, these dreams? And perhaps the best place to start is to look at the democracy that we want to grow them into. And where does that begin at home? And where does that begin with how we look at dealing with our children? And how we enact our relationships within the home?
In 1966, Herb had a job with the Air Force, and we were in Europe for 6 weeks, and we put another month with that, visiting family and friends over there, and one of our kids who was studying over there. And one of the places that we went was, I'm sorry, that was 77. Take that back. This was another trip. We took the children over for the summer, and one of the places that we visited was the homestead that Herb's father was raised on. Now, the brokering family has lived on this same piece of land for at least 400 years, and probably, you know, who knows, maybe 1,000 years, this same family has been on this land, but it's traceable back in the church records for 400 years. And the last time we were there, I think, was 2 years ago, and we found that the family was very, very happy because they were going to be able to continue the same family format that had been going on through this whole period. And they had been very worried about this because this is the 1980s, and the oldest son was of a marriageable age now at 18 and was looking at the girls. And the reason they were so happy 2 years ago was that he had found one who was going to marry him, and she was a farmer's daughter, and she was willing to come back and live on the farm and carry out this family lifestyle, which was the oldest female married, who is married into the family, takes care of the pigs, Or if she's too old to work, then she doesn't do any work at all. But then the next level down takes care of the pigs. That would be grandma. The wife of the oldest son then takes care of the cows. And her daughters do whatever work needs to be done. It's fanned out. They both work in the kitchen, but grandma is in charge of the kitchen. So the second in command, you see, is the assistant cook. And this is all worked out. Everybody knows exactly what their work plan is. And that's why it works. There's no arguing about it or, you know, this is my kitchen or something. They must work cooperatively on this. And if there isn't enough space, they have just built a whole apartment on the side of this 400-year-old house to accommodate this family. They have now taken the walls down around Oma's kammer, which was her bedroom, which was the biggest bedroom in the house, and made that into a big dining room. And now that they've built this new apartment, this is continuing on. We don't have that in this country. In our history, some of these second sons came over here. You know, where is our end of the brokering family on this side of the ocean instead of still living on that farm? Was because Herb's father was a rebel. And he got mad and left and came over here. And I bet if you trace back in your ancestry, you'll find somebody who came over here to escape the draft or to get away from the farmland being cut up in too many little pieces, or the fact that he was a second or third or fourth son who wasn't getting a piece of this pie and had to assist the older brother or go out and get a job someplace. That's what this country was made up for. So, you know, we have a whole different perspective on this, which we'll talk a little bit more about in the next section here. But, you know, where does this bring us now, having this kind of background that we're coming to? When our country started, it was farms. And children learned how to be males and how to be females by working with their parents. What they learned in school was how to do reading, writing, and arithmetic. You see, things that had to be transmitted socially. But they learned social skills. They learned how to handle their emotions. They learned how to be a farmer, how to can, how to do laundry. The stuff of life they learned at home with their parents. If they lived in the city, their parents were probably craftsmen or shopkeepers of some sort. And again, they lived in the business. People lived at home. Isn't that true? I mean, think about it. Early America. It really was not, I think, until the generation that my parents are in, and my father's dead and gone, my mother's 93, my dad would have been 94. I think in their generation that this began to change and more people came into cities. And I remember all the books I read as a child in the library, the grandparents were on the farm. You know, all the little readers, the Dick and Jane of my day, all went off to visit grandma and grandpa on the farm. You know, but kids don't have grandparents on the farm anymore. Grandmas are now in the workplace. You know, what does your grandmother do? Is she home canning and putting up berries and things like that, tending the cows? She's in a condo in Phoenix, or she's running a computer, or
she's an executive in some office somewhere, not ready to babysit.
Yeah, and she comes home with her attaché case. I've already given my kids notice that if and when they ever have any children, I am not going to babysit them because I am working. I already did my stint with raising children, right? Just wait till I get some grandchildren. Probably quit working right away to take care of them. But at any rate, you know, what can we ask now in this changing society? What can we ask for today? Half of our kids of preschool age are in daycare. And I've been training daycare teachers for at least a dozen years. And I want to tell you, I work in Minnesota, and we have the reputation for having some of the best standards for daycare in the country. And if this is true, I want to tell you this country's daycare is in really sad shape, because we in Minnesota are not proud of what we're giving in daycare. And the reason we can't be proud of it is our society does not value it. We don't value people this age. You know, now you're getting brokering soapbox here. And therefore, we don't put any money into it. In spite of the fact that people like Kathy and myself, who have our education in this area, realize that this child is in the most important stage of his whole life. What you and I are today, we became when we were his age. What's happening to him here right now is going to develop him into the kind of man he will be someday. Is he going to learn to be compassionate? Is he going to learn that he has feelings that he can express? Is he going to learn to work for justice? Or is he going to learn to work for money? You know, what kind of values he's going to have is depending on how we're treating him right now. Is he learning to trust? Even his faith development is being formed right now by the way we're treating him. And not just these two people that are officially in charge of him, but all of us. So, you know, what kind of a thing, what kind of a country should we be working on now is a really big question. And I feel very, very strongly that parenting is no longer, it's not viable anymore like it maybe was when I was a child for the nuclear family to be the only people concerned with parenting. I was raised in the city, so in my day that was pretty much up to my mother because my dad was too busy at work. He had his little flock, and I remember one time asking him if I could have an appointment with him as a member of his congregation since I couldn't get any time with him as his daughter because, you know, his work, and I think that was very typical of men in his generation and very typical of men now. I would like to see more daycare put into industry. Industries who have put daycare into their facilities have discovered that they have a lot better workers because people aren't worried about where their kids are and what's happening to them, and they can run and have lunch with them and have some quality time with them and so on. So, you know, that sort of option, that sort of thing is something that we as a society should be thinking about. If you look at it from a dollar and cents perspective, it makes all the sense in the world. I don't know how many of you have read the research that David Weikert at the Highscope Educational Foundation has done. But he's kept track of children that were of high risk. I mean, not just, you know, your nice little affluent suburban kids, but these were children that came from really high risk situations. And he's kept track of a control group of children, or he had a control group in his preschool group, for at least 25 years now, and he has statistics to show that the children who had a good preschool education that included parenting education have cost the taxpayer less money. Fewer of them needed remediation in school, few of them needed special services, few of them got in trouble with the law, fewer of them are on welfare, more of them are contributing members to society that are paying taxes than taking up tax money. Now, you know, that is cold, hard facts. Why society is not looking at that and saying, then it makes more sense to put more money into preschool education than it does to put it into, you know, building more prisons and things like this. We can prevent these things if we start with people at this stage of life instead of waiting until they're teens and then saying, now how are we going to get these kids off drugs? How are we going to get these kids out of the jails? You know, these questions we ask about teens.
And the one important factor of that particular study is that it included the parent education. It
yes.
wasn't just working with the kids outside the home, that we can do magic to them that will last over the time that they're at home, but that it was involving the home in education again.
Or that we professionals know more about taking care of your children than you do, you see. You know, it was a working together of the parents and helping the parents to see why we're doing what we're doing in the school. Okay, we thought that it would be interesting to talk a little bit about the changing roles that are happening with people that are bringing this need about. I mean, when I raised my children, I didn't need daycare. Some people needed daycare, but not nearly the number of people who need daycare now. And daycare is like everything else. The people who have the money, who have good jobs and are affluent, can afford to get better daycare than people who don't have money. Maybe until you get down to the bottom, because I think some of the better daycare centers are the ones that are free, actually. You know, so if you're poor enough, you may get better daycare than if you're in the middle somewhere. Do you want to hit the changing roles a little bit?
Okay. the topic for tonight was originally looking at the particular that the role of father in parenting, and I think we want to bring this in as part of this also. That certainly has been an encouraging change in this current generation to see more fathers participating in the raising of the children, to hear about the house father as well as the typical house mother. And I think there are beginning to be a few more of those that we hear about, where mom may be out working for a period of time and dad is home taking care of the children for whatever reason. If it happens to be because he's been laid off or because that's been a choice. Mom stays home for the first year or so after the birth of the child, and then dad takes a year or two off and takes his responsibility in the parenting role. The co-parenting, what I think has been the tradition, and I think in a way I started to buy into this and then didn't in my own marriage some 26, 27 years ago, except I had a background in early childhood education and child and family at the time that I was married. As we say, Paul and I were married in our old age. and so it was in a sense a traditional marriage that was non-traditional at that time. First of all, we were much older than most people who got married 26, 27 years ago. But a lot of people at that time, you know, the authority figure in the home was the father, and that you wait, if the kid did something wrong, wait until dad comes home. So what kind of image does that produce for the role of father to those children? A happy, joyful, caring, loving one? Or a fearful one? Wait until dad comes and he's going to beat me up or really yell at me, or he'll lay down the law.
And think of the link of between that and the scriptural image of God as father, too. Yeah.
And you wondered whether you wanted to use, and there was a period of time, I think, in the church where some people were really questioning whether we could use the term a loving father to give us an image of what God is like, because fathers were not put in the role of being a loving father, but being the hard-nosed, disciplinary person. And I think it's very good that we're going away from that, and that mom and dad both can be very caring people. Mom and dad both can be involved in doing important things, helpful things, supportive things out in the world. And not just mom is the one who sits home and is always there to give us a cookie. Dad can be there at times too. But that to give a model, a picture, a good image for females to see that there are some other possibilities than to be baby makers. I think my husband has become very much involved as part of a feminist movement. When he began to realize he was raising two daughters, and what were the hopes that we had for them? What did we really want for them in their lives as adults? And to be able to find a more positive answer for that, began to feel we had to change some of our own ideas about what. Whose role should be what, or who should carry what particular role. So that's an important thing for each person within your household to discuss, because you may have some very different expectations. I do a lot of marriage preparation courses in my work, and I find at least half of the people in the courses that I give are buying into marriage at the traditional role. Yes, I'm going to work now until we have a child, and then I'm not going to work at all until they're out of high school, because my husband will have a good enough job. Well, he's probably now working as a at a very menial task in an assembly line, and although the salaries can get to be fairly good there, I know of two couples that when they went through marriage prep earlier this spring who are now off on strike or out of work for the fellows. The women are still working. But to say, he'll take care of me. We look for that rescue image, that protector. And I venture to say that after somewhere within that first 10 years of marriage, they're going to decide there's got to be something more to life than this. I remember when I was out working and began to not be able to verbalize these changing expectations, and the marriage will be in difficulty.
And that's the problem of self-development with that too. I remember one day saying very angrily to Herb, but you didn't have to choose between self and career development and parenting. and I did. If I wanted to be a mother, that meant that that was my career. And I couldn't go on with any sort of career development. Actually, I never started any. I plunged into parenting almost instantly because that's really what I wanted to be. You know, I was the little girl who they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, I'm mommy. But, you know, that only lasts so long. And then what? You know, do you start career development late? And a lot of us have. I mean, I never thought of having a career. I was so stupid and naive that when I was in college taking elementary education courses, that when I fell in love with Herb, I changed my major to a psych major, which I knew was preparing me for absolutely nothing. But that's what I enjoyed, so that's what I wanted to take. And I remember my advisor saying to me, but you know, this is, are you sure you want to do this? Because I'm going to be a preacher's wife. You know, that was career enough. I'm going to be a mommy. I just can't imagine that I thought that way. And that was back in 1947 or 8, I guess. You know, that recently. And if my daughter came home and told me that today, I'd really get panicked because she wouldn't be trained to do something else. To me, it's a waste of human power to think that half of us are automatically delegated to do the child nurturing, and the other half are automatically, by virtue of which sex you are, relegated to be the money earners, and that there's not some other way to sift this out by talents or that we can't both have this experience. I mean, Herb has loved nurturing his children, absolutely loved it. He was a great father when he had time. You know, when he didn't have to go off to work and when they weren't claiming him down at the workplace and that he had to put parenting aside, he would have been made a super house father, loved to cook and knows how to do the wash and all those good things. But I still see a lot of fathers and families where the father comes, the two parents come home, they pick the kids up from the daycare center, for whomever it is most convenient. But when they get home, she makes the dinner and puts the kids to bed and does the laundry, and he sits down and watches the TV and has a beer and things like that. I'm hearing, I think, too much of that, and I feel like it's really unfair. If women are going to pick up the traditional men's work, then the men have to share in the traditional women's work. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it makes sense to me.
I suppose one of the next steps to look at is the whole process of communication, and that can carry on for many, many more sessions. But how do the male and female in the partnership communicate their feelings and needs to each other? How do they go about the whole important process of decision making? To look at what is the problem, to define their needs as it relates to that problem. The next step then is to brainstorm all the possibilities without evaluating at that time, because that stops the creative thinking. Then when you've gotten all the possibilities down to go down through and look at the alternatives and the consequences of each, and to then pick out which ones are going to be the most helpful in their particular situation. Not thinking, what are the neighbors going to think? What's mom and dad or my in-laws going to think? But what's going to be best for you? What will work best for you that you can both win? Not that there's someone losing at the expense of the other person winning. Somebody who's more powerful, and so I'm going to get my way, feeling an ego trip, the sense of having to have power, that I'm going to get my way on this or else I'm not a man or I'm not a woman. I think those distinctions really need to fade, and you say, what's going to be the best for us in this situation, for our needs, for my personal need fulfillment, my partner's personal need fulfillment, and those children that we have brought into this world, and not have to let somebody else be responsible for them. And that communication and that decision-making includes how do we use our time.
A lot of this has to do with what kind of self-esteem the people in the family have. And it certainly has to do with what kind of self-esteem the children are learning. Kathy, I like to draw an arc to illustrate this. If you want to put a rainbow-type arc on the bottom of the thing there. And at one end is the laissez-faire parenting style. And Kathy spoke about this at her session yesterday. And at the other end of this continuum is the authoritarian. Oh, I didn't mean that sort of. Talk about this is just great. We're talking about communication. I mean, an arc like a rainbow.
Okay.
So that it, instead of being a straight line, I have learned to bend it because it pictures to me better that the people who use these two parenting styles in their extreme are the people with the lowest self-esteem.
What's here?
That's the authoritarian parents at the other end. So that, you know, the better the self-esteem of the parents, the higher you are on this arc with your self-esteem, the more apt you will be to be able to use democratic parenting style, which is in the middle somewhere. Most of us don't stay in one place. We maybe even fluctuate. A lot of people are very laissez-faire until they hear a crash, and then they suddenly get very authoritarian and go to spank. You know, I mean, they may be totally ignoring what these kids are doing and not giving them much communication at all about where they should be working. But Kathy and I have talked about this. We both feel very strongly that if we want to continue a democracy, we have to begin to both model this and practice it in the family. And I have found working with parents that the lower their self-esteem, the more difficult it is for them to do this. You know, people with low self-esteem very often find it very difficult to give children instructions and parameters and tell them what to do. Or they're at the other end where they tell them everything to do, and you're going to do it why? Because I say so, and don't ask why. You know, I'm your mother, and I said to do it, now get. You know, the reason I may do that is because I feel powerless, and pushing kids around gives me a chance to feel powerful, and so I take this opportunity. The laissez-faire mother probably feels so powerless that she can't even push herself on her kids. She's, you know, more squished. And that's not always a mother. Sometimes men are like that, too.
Or they won't listen to me anyway, or they
so
know.
So I give up.
Yeah, why bother?
Just, you know, it's like I just wash my hair and I can't do a thing with it. And that's the way I feel about the kids, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in between is the democratic thing. And I think this has such a great bearing with our faith. I don't know where people who aren't Christian get their self-esteem, because everything in the media tells us that we're wearing the wrong sort of jeans, we're using the wrong detergent to wash our clothes, we don't smell properly, our hair isn't just right. I mean, you know, just look at the advertisements. They're all trying to make us better. You know, you got to drive the right kind of car, be seen at the right places, do the right things. And, you know, even your mother will not tell you. Now, my mother is probably better than most mothers at building self-esteem. She always made me feel capable, and she always made me feel that I was lovable. There was just, I can't imagine anything I could have done that my mother would have withdrawn her love. In fact, it was the fact that she loved me so deeply and so sincerely that controlled my behavior. I mean, even if I knew she wouldn't find out, I still couldn't let her down by doing something that she didn't value, that she disapproved of. But I have to tell you this funny, funny story. I was 54, and she was in her 80s, and we were in a discount store, and I saw a hat on the shelf as we were passing by. I wasn't in the market for a hat at all. I said, "Oh, Mom, look at that hat. That looks like it would match my raincoat." And she said, "Try it on. If it fits you, I'll buy it, because that one you're wearing isn't warm enough." And I thought, if at 54 I don't know enough to wear a warm enough hat, I'll probably never learn. You see, you know, you never stop being a mother, and there's something about mothering that you always want to improve this kid, right? Tell it what to do, kind of thing. It's also a matter of power, and I think this again has to do with our faith, because, you know, I've heard a lot of this, and it hasn't been labeled power, but I've heard this described in many sessions in the few days that I've been here. God has created us to be creatures that can make choices. And what does that mean? That means he's handing us some of the power. You know, we pray for thine is the power. And ultimately, we know if we're going to be happy, we listen to him. And that's such a great parenting model, because kids can only handle so much power. But if you don't give them the amount of power that they can handle, then they have to struggle to get it, because there's something in us of God that makes us all want power. We all want power. And that person who is totally laissez-faire has given up. The power has been so taken away from them that they've given up. Was it you that was telling Dreiker's four levels of thing? Those four levels are, they get sicker as they go down. And that child who's copped out totally is a child who is so squished that they don't have enough oomph anymore to act out and to grab for power, to be revengeful, or even to show off, to get attention. They have no power. So sharing power with children is a great disciplinary measure, but we get that model from God, you see. He gives us, he shares the power with us and saying, you know, here are the rules, but you guys can choose to do them or not. You know, I made you need 7 to 8 hours of sleep. But if you don't take that sleep, you know, that's up to you. You know, you want to feel rotten the next day? That's the natural consequence. Then don't sleep. You know, you want to overeat? I'm not going to make you get fat, but the food will. You know, God doesn't say, look, Kathy Bosch, you overeat and I'm going to make you fat. But that's the natural consequence of overeating. That's the way, that's God's natural plan for things. It's a great parenting model. So, you know, we get this from him. But to get back to the self-esteem, we get our self-esteem from God, who says, you are of such inestimable worth because I made you. And even though you've blown it and you've made the wrong choices and you haven't obeyed these rules that I laid out here, you know, here they are, plain as day. All you're going to do is this and you'll be happy, right? But I'll forgive you for that. You are worth so much to me that I've sent my son to take this punishment for you. Now, you know, if we really believe that, and I think you're probably all here because you do believe it up here, but I think our churches are full of us, people, who believe that message here, but not here, where it gives us high self-esteem. Because if we believed it here, there is no way we could walk out the church door Sunday morning with our low self-esteem intact. And we do. Even pastors. I've known lots of pastors that have so, let me get into that. The one that ruined my nursery school, poor guy, you know, felt so powerless. He just grabbed power wherever he could get it. And it was sad to watch. It has nothing to do with who you are. It means, you know, really getting that message. Then you get this self-esteem, and then you automatically do these wonderful things with your kids. See, if we could just all have high self-esteem, we could raise kids with high self-esteem, and all the world's problems would go away.
Thank you.